Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM, and HD1 KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Continuing here at 95.7 The Game, John Smoltz joins us, the Hall of Famer, of course, baseball analyst on TV with Fox and MLB Network, as well as a celebrity golf standout, which we will get to. John, I know you're a huge sports fan. We've been talking so much today about the Zion Williamson thing last night. It had me thinking, in your pitching days, when you're in Atlanta, did you ever blow through a spike? Did you ever pop out of your shoe out there on the hill?
Not to the degree like that. I think you always have your shoe or your spike in the bottom end. Could cause some issues that you end up wanting to change, but never seeing anything like I saw last night.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. You never see leather shrapnel fly like that. But
no, and you wonder how that's even possible. I mean, this guy's a freak, and his talent level is through the roof, and obviously strong, fast combination of what he can do is just crazy, and the poor shoe just wasn't able to hold its leather together.
I'm not sure that it's the shoe's fault. I think the shoe was asked to do more than it could do.
You might be right.
Baseball this winter has been dominated by the arguments about whether free agents are being frozen out, and we're just starting to see a thaw now with the Manny Machado signing. But is it your sense that it's going to be harder and harder for free agents in general until the CBA negotiations begin in earnest, or was this just a one-year blip?
No, I don't think it's an issue that has to have, you know, an altering or a shift or a stoppage. I think this is more to do with, look, what you get used to may not always be, and way it always is might not be the thing that works for you. In time, you have to find ways to adjust. You know, if you just separate the emotion of it and you look at the timing of it, the timing has changed dramatically where it seems like it's going longer and longer into whether it's spring training or the season before decisions are being made for whatever reason. You can come up with analytics. You can come up with all kinds of things that where now information is being shared universally. Everyone has the same technologies now, and everyone has the same information. So you get closer to the same type ideas about a lot of players. And universally in the past, there was always a couple outliers, a couple owners, or a couple teams that would veer away from that. You don't quite see that as much. And so, much like when I was a player, we had to be creative and had to think of ways to do things that would satisfy your desires or goals or needs. And I think, you know, the fact that we have so many players in a situation that they're in, that gets a little bit of head scratching from the masses and the people that go, okay, there's a lot of great players that still aren't signed. All right, Matt Machado went, now Harper's going to go, and will that be the drop that sets everybody else in motion? I guess we'll find out.
You mentioned the outliers, and I don't think, John, many people expected the Padres to land Manny Machado. When the news broke the other day that he was signing in San Diego, what was your reaction?
Well, first of all, good for San Diego, because I am a fan of baseball, and I want to see San Diego relevant. I really do. I think San Diego is a great place to go. It's a great place to play. And when San Diego's relevant, baseball is just better. You know, it's a little ironic that the two teams with the two highest contracts in baseball history end up being the Marlins and the Padres, two teams that historically have not had, well, the Marlins won two World Series, but in the last, you know, so many years, it's been a rough stretch. So I think for San Diego, I think it's a step in the right direction from a standpoint that they have acquired a lot of talent. The West has been dominated by San Francisco and L.A. over the years. And now, you know, the partner in the California region looks like they're closer and closer to being relevant for a longer period of time. And I just think that's good for baseball, and I think it's good to have San Diego in the mix.
Rather than bore you with asking for an analysis of the Giants this year, particularly if they don't get Harper, the A's are an interesting case because I think most people's eyes, 97 was more than anybody thought they could do. So the question is whether, as you look at that team, are they due a regression, or do they look to you like the kind of team that could be a problem for Houston in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I think the one thing that to expect 97 again would be awfully difficult, especially with what injury standpoints they've had in their rotation. But I think the way the American League is set up, why can't they get back to the playoffs? I agree. I think they can get right back to the playoffs. You know, whether they're able to win a division to do that or back in the wild card is yet to be determined. But the American League has not really improved itself as a whole. The better teams got better. You know, the Red Sox still going to be the Red Sox. The Yankees got better. Houston's obviously in the conversation of the top three teams in baseball. With Cleveland, maybe, you know, still having a chance to win that division, but not as good as they may have been last year on the roster rise. Oakland is certainly in a position with their youth, if they can find a way to get some innings out of the rotation and not rely so heavily upon the bullpen. That's where I think baseball doesn't understand. The repeatability of dominance in the bullpen cannot last as long as people think it can. When you have to heavily rely on their bullpen pieces, as dominant as they were, and you have to keep going to those weapons over and over and over again, it catches up. It really does catch up with itself. So that would be the only thing that would teeter me into think differently is if they can't get enough innings out of their veteran starters, or at least allow them to have enough innings over the long haul to make their bullpen fresher at the end.
Well, they even started relievers. They were using those openers. Of course, they used it in the wild card game against the Yankees. We saw Tampa Bay do that last year. As a guy who was a frontline starter, you were also a lights-out closer as well. What were your thoughts when you saw the Rays and the A's toy with going with the opener last year, which they did, especially like they did in the wild card game against the Yankees?
Yeah, I tip my hat to any way that the team can find ways to win. Look, the Brewers are going to be a different team this year. I don't think they're looking at the model of last year and saying this is our blueprint for have a different approach and a different blueprint. And they traded away a lot of their young arms to be able to do what they did and to win. You know, again, the strength of the American League is not in quantity. It's in quality. And so you can make things look one way and really make yourself believe that this is the way to do it. And I just don't believe long-term that's a successful formula to win a championship. To win and compete with a formula financially, yeah. I think what the A's and the Rays were able to do, I tip my hat to their approach to pull off what they did. I just don't think it's a blueprint for the future. I think in a given year when you have injuries like they did and you have circumstances that, they've shown what you can do in one given year. I don't know that model over a three-year period has sustainability. I guess we're going to find out if teams are really looking at this as a new modern way to counteract a heavily loaded roster or a team that financially can do more things than you can. So from a competitive standpoint, a competitive edge, I see why those kind of things would work. In a given year, I just don't know if that model works for 2 and 3 years in a row.
With Bruce Bochy's retirement, there might only be two more managers in baseball who operate not only with basic independence, but operate on an old school way, and that would probably be Ron Gardenhire and Terry Francona. Is it fair to say that those three are among the last of a dying breed, that the manager is now basically going to be running his team by committee with the front office? Or is that another thing that's going to just pass its way through and then there will be some new dominant manager who basically resists interference from above? Or is that day done?
No, I can't say anything's ever done. I think sports is cyclical and so is baseball. You look over time and it self-corrects. It normally has self-corrected over time. And if there's new rule changes that come to change the baseball strategies, I think that's possibly going to have come on the rise too, and people will learn to adjust. I don't think in anything in life that you can say there are absolutes. And the one thing that, you know, I love this game. This game has been awesome for me, and I love being a fan of it. But I can tell you this. There's no way, no matter how many years I've played it, I can tell you absolutes. No different than somebody who's never played the game can tell me there's an absolute or tell me that there's a statistical category that can guarantee X, Y, Z. I think the information is valuable. The technology is valuable. The balance part, that's where you're seeing teams tip the scales maybe a little too much in one area. And I think to say that something's never going to come back or to say that we're, you know, I just don't believe that. And history has shown that's not the case. But a trend or a copycat type mentality, that definitely exists in our sports. And we see that throughout a variety of sports on how that's implemented. And then teams usually find a way to say, okay, I'm going to zig when everybody's zagging, and I'm going to make my niche, and I'm going to carve out what I think is the best avenue for success.
The Universal DH, John, is gaining some steam and bringing it to the National League. You played in the National League just about your entire career. What would it say to you if the National League pitchers don't have to hit anymore?
You know, that's another thing. I'm all about. See, I'm one of those guys that's not just stuck in old school. I'm progressive. I like to see change. I like to see competitive balance. And I just think that we've crossed the bridge of interleague either has to go away, and we need to go back to American League and the National League and go duke it out and let each league do what they want to do. Or we got to have a set of rules that doesn't give somebody a clear advantage. And what I mean by that is because there's interleague every day and because you're competing for a playoff spot and you're finishing the season sometimes in the other league, and it's a disadvantage for you. And how do you make up your roster? If we're going to continue to have this greatness in our game but have these inconsistencies that pop up, that I just want a competitive advantage for everybody to be the same. And whatever rule change comes will give nobody a competitive advantage if everyone has to play by the same rules. And so as a guy who grew up in the National League, loved the strategy of it, loved to hit, I'm fine. I'm fine with whatever's decided that will be better for baseball. But I don't think you can have both. I don't think you can have interleague baseball and still be able to keep, you know, what you want to keep and still find that the competitive balance is – we play 162 games, and we still don't have everybody in our league playing the same teams. I don't understand that. It doesn't make sense. That's the one thing I don't understand. You can understand why football can't play everybody. You can understand, but every other sport plays everybody the same, and that's what I'd love to see.
Do you get a sense that more and more people, either within the game or sort of on the media fringe of it, as you are taking that a more progressive view toward this, or is there still resistance to the point where any rules change is an upset?
Well, I think it's natural in life. I mean, you know, if you just go back and in your own way figure out what you thought about the football rule changes or the basketball or hockey, after a year, nobody even knows it's different. No, they've accepted it. When you think about the catcher's collision rule and the second base slide rule, it's all integrated now. Nobody thinks about it differently. That's what's going to happen with any rule change that comes, whether it's a pitch clock, whether it's a pitching strategy maneuver. I just think it's easy when you're stuck in the game. If you'd have asked me 20 years ago, John, what do you think about the way the game? I would have said, man, I'm trying to be the best version of myself in the game that I know today, the rules that exist. I would not be thinking 10 years from now. I wouldn't even be concerned about 2 years from now. So from an emotional standpoint, you're always going to have the reaction the way it is, pro or con. But when you sit back and realize over time what really changed and how difficult or disappointed am I in this rule change, most people are fine with how it ends up being. And I think that's the case we're going to have here. Baseball is a game that, you know, statistically has been shown that it's been played a little bit slower than most people would like. And they're trying to find ways to speed that up to showcase the greatness of our game.
All right, you've committed, last thing for you, Johnny. You've committed to play in the American Century Tournament up in the championship up in Lake Tahoe coming up in July. You've finished in the top 10 every year, but you've yet to win the tournament up there. What's it going to take for you to win that tournament in July?
I'm ready. I'm ready to win. I just came off of a win in Florida, the Diamond Resorts. I'm a different golfer, having experienced the Senior Open, of where I got humiliated and learned a lot about myself. I learned the most through failures. The Tahoe event is one of the greatest events that we have as celebrities, along with the Diamond Resorts, and now getting a chance to play in the Champions Tour. This is all about trying to become the best baseball player that's been gone, golfer that I can be. And this is I'm ready. I'm ready for the challenges, and I've become a better player, having experienced some bad moments, if you will.
You're a Hall of Famer in one sport. Can you do the same in the other?
No, absolutely not. I'm not trying to pretend to be anybody I'm not. I just am having the time of my life, squeezing in golf when I can, and working baseball, you know, for my job.
Well, John, appreciate the time, and thanks for squeezing us in today.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
That is the Hall of Famer, John Smoltz, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. He's already thinking about the celebrity tournament up in Tahoe come July. And it's a little hard to think about, like, summer in July when we have the temperatures we've been having around here.
I know, no doubt.
God, we're such children.
Don't you get cold?
No, I do, but yesterday, and you experienced it yourself.
Oh my gosh, yesterday.
At 7 a.m. in Phoenix, it was 31.
That's cold.
It hasn't been 31 in the Bay Area in
forever. Parts of the Bay Area.
What parts of the Bay Area?
Like, I believe, well, don't quote me on this, but I'm going to go with, like, the Napa northern part of Bay Area.
Well, it did
has
snow
seen,
in the East Bay,
it
right?
Did
we got
Mount
snow
Hamilton.
On the hills.
I mean, there's areas where it's dipped down to the 30s overnight.
Well, yeah, but who's outside overnight?
I don't know. There's people who work, Caltrans workers.
They're working on a snow-capped peak, are they?
No, but they could be working on an icy roadway in Napa, like Highway 29 or something, or Highway 12.
The point is,
I'm just saying.
The point is, what we think is cold, and I've lived here all my life, what we think is cold and what is cold are two radically different things.
Well, sure, it's no comparison to winters in Kansas.
Which is why I can't stomach us complaining about the cold.
But it's what we're used to, Ray.
I was in Denver early in the week. I was in Boulder last Sunday night for a game, and then Monday morning I'm dropping my car off at Denver Airport. 8 degrees outside.
That's cold.
That was cold.
Yeah.
That'll wake you up real quick.
Oh, yeah, you'll get really... Well, the hair on your nose dries up immediately.
But if you're from there, you're more, you know, you
and then your
get
lungs.
Acclimated.
No, you're still dressing up.
Well, sure, but you're used to it.
But it's a dry cold, right?
It's a dry cold, yeah. It's like Arizona, Phoenix. It's a dry heat.
But yes, it was yesterday it was really cold. I was at A's camp yesterday, and standing outside, we were in the shade, too, for a little bit. It got frigid.
Really?
Oh, and everybody's all bundled up, and you look at, like, Bob Melvin had like 4 layers on, and it was brutal yesterday. And then it poured rain. They got the first game of the spring rain out today.
Yeah, against the Mariners.
But
no, the planet is, we're hurtling into the sun. We just don't know it yet.
We didn't necessarily get into the Bryce Harper situation with John. And
no.
Everybody's kind of still waiting for a resolution. By all reports, the Giants are still in it.
I think people are sick to death of it. I really think the statute of limitations on fascination of what he's thinking is over. They just want to know, well, when is this done? Just when is it done? I think most people almost don't care where he goes.
What's it going to take for this to get done, though? I mean, what's he waiting on? Right? He's met with the teams in more than once.
He's waiting on that moment right before a team gets sick and tired of dealing with this and walks away, because the moment before then is the most advantageous moment to strike a deal.
Or is he going to think at the last minute one of these teams is going to come racing in and all of a sudden up their offer? So instead of giving him, let's say, $300 for 10 years, all of a sudden they jack it up to $320 or $330 for 10 years?
Well, they might, just because I think that the Machado deal might have jump-started something. But to jack up a deal by $10 or $20 million takes a few of those meetings in ball team front offices. You know, well, we've said we're going to hold the line at 320, but what if we could get 330?
Honestly, for them, what is the difference between 320 and 300?
I mean, at that point, exactly.
$20 million.
Okay,
it's $20 million.
Well, to us, that's clearly a lot of money, but
it's a lot of money
for them,
to them too. It is.
But is it?
Yes.
Well, in California, there's a big difference being, well, maybe not. I've never been that wealthy, but getting taxed on $300 million versus $320 million.
Manny Machado signing with the Padres.
That's true.
I mean,
high taxes here.
Maybe one of the reasons why the Giants aren't in this is because they'd have to go to 350 or 360 to cover the tax on 310. I mean, I'm not Steve Moskowitz, but no, I mean, it's, you know, John Smoltz said it himself, you know, deals are happening later and later. Yeah. And until you see, I mean, look, last week, Andy McPhail said, we're done. We're pretty much done. Well, they weren't done. They're back in this up to their eyelids. And I think other teams are in this up to their eyelids, too. And Scott Boras is doing what Scott Boras does, which is let's see who blinks last.
But surely by this point, I mean, Harper has an idea of what he's going to be. I mean, what he's being offered. I mean, most teams are like, look, this is what we can do.
But if you have multiple offers that are the same, then you start have to weighing teams.
Sure. And maybe that's what's taking him so long. He's just not 100%
sure. And the fact
is,
he's not doing any of the negotiations. Boras is. So he's calling Boras and says, where are we? And Boras saying, well, you know, we've got such and such on the hook at this number. And, you know, this team that you like a little more, they're not paying as much. You know, he's trying to marry a number and a length of contract with a team. And sometimes you can't get all those linked up in the way you want. I would not be surprised if Manny Machado would have preferred that a different team offer him the most money. But he wanted the most money, so it meant San Diego. But, you know.
At least it's San Diego.
Do you think the ballpark is a negative for the Giants?
It absolutely is. For hitters, yes.
I mean, in this specific example for Bryce Harper, do you think he's holding it against the Giants that they play in a ballpark that's not friendly to left-handed pull hitters?
I think it's more, it's not the first factor. But it's one that's in there. The first factor is they're not going to be very good.
No.
And they're not going to be very good for a while. And there are a few things that make you more anonymous than being on a bad West Coast team. Because the curvature of the earth works against you and your inability to win games works against you. And I think he's a guy who wants to be a high-profile player in a game that needs high-profile players. That then you add to that the fact that the ballpark is unfriendly with left-handed power hitters. I mean, I think there are a lot of things going on, and those things together make that their fabulous choice of restaurants and the beautiful view of the Golden Gate Bridge pales in comparison.
But San Francisco, you got to want to be here.
Yeah, which is why all those other free agent outfielders have raced here over the years in a desperate attempt just to get 300 at-bats.
Remember Carlos Lee? Remember when the Giants were hot and heavy trying to get after him years ago?
Yeah.
How'd that work out for him? Actually worked out better for him that they didn't get him.
Yeah. Well, you know, he didn't. But he was up front with him. He says, I don't want to be cold. I mean, it's the same thing with Carlos Beltran. You know, he just didn't like playing in this ballpark. Now, that doesn't mean that that's the thing that's making Bryce Harper's decision. I think the biggest thing with Bryce Harper is that unless the Giants are willing to pay significantly more than everybody else, the state of the team is not good.
All right, we'll revisit this. Bryce Harper, he's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future,
today.
So we'll,
at least
we'll
not
have time
tomorrow,
to get back into this in a little bit.
We flog this dolphin again.
But we got to give away, try to at least get people to qualify for some Def Leppard tickets, Gianna.
Yeah, so don't forget, we are giving away an opportunity for you to check out Def Leppard in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Two-night stay at the Planet Hollywood Resort plus two tickets to the show. Round-trip airfare or $250 towards travel. So here's what you got to do, friends. Go to our social pages. Go to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Watch Elena's pre-show video. She will tell you exactly what time you will hear that Def Leppard sounder each day. Then you call our contest line 415-402-6865. We will take the first five callers and you will qualify for the grand prize, which we will announce a winner tomorrow. So you can qualify tomorrow as well. And then, of course, the winner will come later on in the show. So I like a little Def Leppard. I like a little Pour Some Sugar on Me, Roxy.
Can I give you a Def Leppard story?
Okay.
You're probably going to think less of me after I tell you the story.
After?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Gee, I wonder how this could make it worse.
The bar's pretty low. All right, I'm going to save this story.
No, go ahead.
All right, I got to get to it real quick. We used to have parties at our house like back in my younger days. This is like a few years ago. and
pre-wife,
like 80,
pre-kids.
Yes,
yeah.
Like 80
pre-Def
party.
Leppard.
No, it wasn't pre-Def Leppard. But again, this is just stupid people being stupid. We used to do shots for how many arms the drummer had when the song came out.
Stop. Oh.
It's so wrong.
Well, that's
so wrong.
You'd have some good Def Leppard knowledge then, because what, it was like 84, I think-ish, when he had his accident?
Yeah.
So you'd have to know what song.
Exactly. Okay. What album it came off of, yep. And then we'd have to run and take, yeah.
Wow.
Your opinion of me just went down really quick. All right, we'll jump over to the Warriors. Coming up next, Jim Barnett will join us. But first, here is Gianna with an update.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Coming up shortly, it'll be the 5 before 5 with Gianna. Warriors and Kings tonight. Warriors getting back after it against Sacramento. Could be a playoff preview. Of course, you can hear the game right here in your home for the Warriors. 95-7 The Game. And speaking of the Warriors, along with Ray Ratto and Gianna, Roxy Bernstein in for Damon Bruce on the Damon Bruce Show. We welcome in Jim Barnett, Warriors TV analyst, of course, joining us here on the show. Jim, what's going on? You ready to get after it again?
Yeah, after a week off, it's time to finish the season. 27 more games to go and see what the Warriors can do. And obviously maintain the lead in the West so they get home court advantage. But it'd be nice to catch Milwaukee, Toronto, and they're still behind them for the best record in the entire NBA. I think it's important. If you face one of those teams, that you have home court advantage in the finals. It's very, very critical.
Well, but if you have the second best record, you get game 6 at home, and if they need to go to game 7, they deserve to lose.
Well, that's a big statement, Ray. I know. How did I know you were going to come back with
that? Well, most series don't go 7 games.
Yeah.
That's all. The real advantage is that you get the first two at home and you get to dictate the terms of the rest of the series. But
absolutely. That's huge if you get the first two at home. Absolutely. Okay.
Is there, and typically this is true of any team, but it's been not really that true for Golden State. Is there a team they don't want to play at any point in these playoffs? I mean, is there a team that they actually would consider tanking a regular season game to try to avoid?
I don't think so. I don't think Steve Kerr feels that way at all. I don't think any player on the roster feels that way at all. I believe they are very, very confident. And you can tell that just by the way they go through the season the last few years. They expect to beat everybody and go on and win a championship. They know it's very difficult, and it is very difficult. You got to have a little luck on your side. I think the biggest thing that they, not that you worry about it, you're just hoping that you remain healthy through the end of the season and that you're at full strength when you go into the playoffs with everybody.
And conversely, of teams 6 through 11 in the West, is there a team that they want to play more than any other in the first round? And by that, I mean Utah, San Antonio, the Clippers, Kings, Lakers, or Minnesota.
You know, they've beaten the Sacramento Kings 3 times, but every game has been a fight, and they've been fortunate. You know, 1-point win, 5-point win, 4-point. It's been Sacramento's vastly improved. On a selfish basis, I'd like to see them play Sacramento just simply because it's an hour and a half down the road, and it's the proximity geographically is very, very nice. It makes it a little bit easier. I don't know, for me anyway, psychologically. But I'll tell you something. Now I'm going back to that other question. I think the Utah Jazz, that's not that they would try to avoid them, but I think they're a very, very tough team. And any first-round matchup with anybody with Utah, I think, is going to be tough. They're very, very good at home. They've got they're going to be going in with momentum. They've got the easiest schedule coming down the stretch. They played a lot of road games and tougher schedule in the first half of the season. I don't know what the deal is with Houston this year. They keep kind of stumbling around. We'll find out what they look like Saturday night in game 2 of this 2-game homestand before they go on the road again. But I like the parity this year, Ray and Roxy. I like the parity in the league this year. There's no given. Oklahoma City's had an incredible run coming up to the All-Star break after a very, very poor start. Denver has surprised everybody, and they're strong, although I don't know. For some reason, I think maybe they're playing above their capability when you really look at everybody. Maybe the same with Portland, too. But San Antonio, yeah, obviously the Warriors are better than they are. They should beat them. But San Antonio's with their coach by Greg Popovich. They'll be ready to play. I think, you know, the big story is you know, LeBron James going to lead the Lakers to a playoff situation. And if not, that's going to be a lot of talk in the NBA. But you've got teams that have been in the playoffs the last few years, New Orleans and Minnesota the last year, that are looking on the outside right now. And, of course, we could go on and on about the New Orleans situation and what a debacle that is with the Anthony Davis leaking the trade and the Lakers, how that, you know, I've seen them go way down and get beat by, I don't know how many points, 46 or something. And then they came back and won a big game at Boston. So you just never know.
Jim, the Warriors, they've, other than the second half, essentially, of the game in Portland, they played really well to close out the quote-unquote first half, right? I mean, it's
right.
Crazy that we're saying that the first half when there's only 25 games to go. But they won 16 out of 18 heading into the break. Can they all of a sudden jump back into that tonight, or could it take a little bit for them to rev it back up again?
No, I think they'll be ready. I think they understand the importance of this, and there's a little bit of breather, 27 games left. That whets their appetite a little bit. They've got to be hungry. And as I said before, Sacramento's given them a run for the money in each and every game. I think what they have to do in the second, you know, for the last 27 games of the season, I think their defense has to get a lot better. They improved with their ball possession and cut down on turnovers over the last, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 games. Did a pretty nice job of that. And notwithstanding that last loss to Portland just before the All-Star break, which is one heck of a game for 39 minutes, but then all hell broke loose on it. I think they've got to get better defensively. They slipped in that department. They did that same thing last year, and they played really great defense in the playoffs. So it's a team that you always worry about, that they really bank on turning it on and off. But you want to go in on a high note. I would love the way they had won 15 out of 16 games, and then they finally lost that last one. But they know the importance of this, and they want to definitely maintain number one in the West.
Why?
Why?
Because I mean, they didn't have to do that last year. What is the compelling?
They got very lucky, Ray. They got very lucky last year against Houston. They got lucky that Chris Paul got injured. They were down 3-2, and I know Steve Kerr spoke very positively and everything, and they came back and won the games. But they were fortunate. We don't know how those. It's just you want to make it as easy a path as you can. You don't want to have to be. It's nice to be challenged, but I think having the top seed in the West so that you do get home court advantage, like you say, you get the first two games at home, you get, you know, games 1-2, and you get 5-7 if it goes that far. It's just that's otherwise why compete?
Jim Barnett with us here on 95.7 The Game. Well, there's something to play for. Well, you should compete.
No, I get that. The only reason it was a rhetorical question, but the only reason I asked it, and I'll repose it a different way. Is the only way that impacts you is if you don't believe, as the Warriors do, that they are better than everybody else. And under normal circumstances, yeah, I could see where having home court advantage would be important. But I've always gotten the impression that the Warriors aren't bothered by that as much as both teams, by most. They aren't bothered as much as most teams are. And that I don't know if they feel as compelled to be the top seed as most teams would.
No, I totally agree with that, Ray. I understand that because they're a very, very good road team. You know, the Warriors, I don't know whether they have, I've not looked right now, but I bet they have the best road record in the NBA. If not, they have one of the top ones. And they know how to win on the road. There's no question about that. I think you get a little psychological advantage. But also this team, maybe they need challenges. Maybe they need some kind of negative thing that people talk about to get them going. Maybe they play better under dire circumstances or pressure and something like that and negativity. So there's that possibility too, because they do get bored, and maybe they need wake-up calls once in a while, and they do. They always respond after a loss, usually with a win, I'd say more often than not. They get knocked in the teeth, and they learn by that, and they play better because then they reach down and play up to their capabilities. So I could see that. But I don't think if they slipped and got second in the West, and it was because, you know, they played in the last 27 games, they were 14-13, and maybe they finished third. I don't think you go psychologically that would help you going into the playoffs. So once they have this, they've grabbed this number one seed over Denver, I think it's important that they continue good habits and go the same old thing. I don't have all the answers, but they're going to be challenged because this is this league is very, very tough this year, and you don't know what's going to happen. And they're going to be, no matter who they meet down the line, when you meet teams that are, you know, fighting for playoff position, home court advantage, if they want the third seed or the fourth seed, those teams are going to be motivated to, and of course, they're already motivated to play the Warriors. We know that.
Last thing for you, Jim. The news coming out that the Warriors are extending minutes now for DeMarcus Cousins. What have you seen from him so far in a Warriors uniform, and is he ready to handle that load?
Well, I think he's ready. I think it's going to be good for him to handle that load because he needs to get better. All right? He can make a difference in there because of his size, but his offensive game is not back where it was before. There's no question about it. You can see he doesn't have the lift, the explosiveness that we've seen before, getting shots blocked underneath, barely getting off the ground. And so I think it's going to be good for him to do that. He's helping them. And I read somewhere where, you know, the games that he's played, he's really not in the plus minus. It hasn't been that impactful. But he is better with them on the floor in so many different ways, and particularly rebounding and defense, and particularly if you're going against someone big inside. The Warriors have been getting killed before he got healthy and started playing on the boards, and he's made a difference in that area. He's a great passer and a very unselfish player. And so I think we haven't seen the best of him yet. I expect to see a lot better performance from him offensively, for one thing. Not that they need that necessarily, but defensively he's going to be a little more mobile. I think he has trouble coming out to the three-point line and then recovering back in. And I think sometimes he overhelps on drives and leaves his man a little bit. And he's got to trust that somebody's going to make a move, and Durant will recover and block a shot or do something like that. He's very willing to help out, and sometimes that goes in a negative way, and his man then burns him inside. So I don't know. I just want to see him a little more, a better footwork around the basket when he has the ball in his hands, a little more explosiveness from him, which I think he can gain. I think it's very difficult coming back from that injury, and I think for a bigger man, it's even tougher, you know, so it's a challenge. But, you know, he's got a lot to play for. He wants to win a championship, but he's got a lot to play for in a contract next year, in a lucrative contract somewhere.
Jim, thanks for making time for us on game day. Appreciate it. Have a great call tonight.
I appreciate you avoiding any conversation about the shoes and the rubber, and the breaking of the shoe with Zion Williamson, or whether he should play or not. And I was listening to you early, and I agree. You know, it's a personal decision, and he came to college to play basketball and stuff. And you know, you can get hurt anytime. You can't play with fear out there. But anyway, I wish him the best, and he's a terrific player, and I hate to see him go down.
Do you ever blow out a shoe like that?
Never. Oh. No. No.
When you played, the shoes were made of concrete.
I could go on and on and on. I'm not an expert on what the hell went wrong. It looks like they do have glue that holds all that together. It looks like it just kind of broke apart. I can't believe it. Obviously, it was a malfunction. The shoe was defective. The shoe is defective. There's no question about it.
All right. Thanks, JB. Appreciate
all right,
it.
Guys.
Jim Barnett, Warriors analyst, joining us here on 95.7 The Game on the Dame and Bruce Show. Coming up, Gianna with 5 before 5, straight ahead.
Some things you need to know. Some things you want to know. It's 5 before 5 on 95.7 The Game.
All right, are you ready, guys?
I'm always ready. I don't know. I can't speak for Ray, though.
Ray, are you ready?
Yes.
For a little five before five. Welcome back.
Let's do this.
I'm Gianna Franco, Roxy Bernstein.
Hi there.
Ray Ratto in the house hanging out. All right, so let's do it. I'm going to give you guys five topics, and we're brought to you by the California Academy of Sciences. Get your opinion and see what you think. Number one.
Number one.
Thank you, Mr. Voice Guy. Duke superstar freshman Zion Williamson, by the way, reportedly has an $8 million loss of value insurance policy in case of significant injury. So I thought I'd bring this up because one of the top stories today is the fact that his shoe blew out in last night's game. He only played for 36 seconds. It was less than a minute into the game. A lot of people at that game as well. So a lot of questions today if he should sit this one out or continue and finish out the year. According to Darren Revelle, Williamson cannot collect on the policy, though, unless he slips past the number 16 overall pick in the 2019 NBA draft. However, they did later add in the article that Duke did pay for the policy, which is allowed under a rule, noting that the premium for an $8 million loss of value policy runs around $50,000. So a little protection there. But of course, there are caveats that come with that type of thing.
He ain't fallen past 16. There is no chance of that. No chance.
I would say two. There's no chance he's falling past two.
So one or two.
He won't fall past one.
Yeah.
Number two.
All right, so we got the Kings coming into Oracle tonight. The Warriors all rested and ready to go. I don't know if you saw this, but Sacramento Kings trolling the Dubs. Listen to this promo they had playing today on Twitter, kind of clowning Warriors fans.
Let's go, Kings!
Warriors!
Let's go, Kings!
Bay Area!
You're not even from the Bay.
I like players. Like the team.
If you search bandwagon, a Warriors fan comes up.
Oracle Arena? You mean Arco West?
We out here playing 4D chess, baby.
Why do the Warriors and the Lakers have to wear so much yellow?
Warriors.
Oh, they should be called the Oakland Warriors.
Slamson is way better than Thunder.
Did you even know you had a mascot?
Warriors.
Only good thing the Warriors have ever done is Chris Webber.
Anton Jameson was pretty good.
Too bad Warriors fans don't even know who that is.
M-O-N-T-A. You don't even know how to pronounce it, do you?
You're talking about the past. It's all about the future.
I don't know why you call them trolleys in San Francisco.
They're really bandwagon.
Bay Area!
I'm not even real NorCal.
When we start taking over, stay with the Warriors.
At least they're not Lakers fans anymore.
Almost a minute of clowning Dubs fans ahead of tonight's game. They tweeted out saying, trying to deal with at Warriors fans before tonight's game, featuring at Scooter Magruder is the guy who puts this video together. Apparently, he does quite a few NBA videos along these lines. But I got to say, it was pretty funny. I don't know. I'm sure Warriors fans do not appreciate that. Well, there were some funny lines. It's not a trolley. It's a bandwagon. Okay, that's kind of funny. A little humor.
You think they care inside that locker room?
Of course not, but the fans. I mean, but he's clowning fans, basically, not necessarily the players.
And I'm going to guess that no Warrior fan A will hear that, other than the ones listening to this show, and B.
So
that
they won't
care. It was retweeted and sent out quite a lot today. It was on the front cover or front page of Bleacher Report as well. So,
well, then that's
sure was seen quite a bit.
Then Bleacher Report should just fold.
Just because they shared that one video.
Yeah, that's just not necessary.
I think we should figure out a way to get them back, right? Come up with our own video.
Just beat them. That's all that matters.
Just beat them. That is, that's all. And that's the thing that you can always...
Scoreboard.
You have. That's right. That's all that matters.
No. Number three.
Good point. What were you going to say, Ray?
I'd say covering's more important than beating.
All right. So Anthony Davis
and
Antonio Brown to guest star on LeBron James' The Shop. So odds are that a major focus of this first episode of The Shop second season will be trade requests. Anthony Davis and AB are among the guests for the season premiere, which is on March 1st. It's LeBron James's HBO vehicle. The remainder of the panel include Jamie Foxx, Meek Mill, Jared Carmichael, and 2 Chainz in a very star-studded affair, apparently. Of course, Davis and Brown have dominated the headlines recently for their respective sports after asking out of their current situations. Number one, did you guys watch the first season?
I saw bits and pieces of it.
What did you think?
It was entertaining. There's some parts of it were interesting. Like Todd Gurley, I thought was interesting on it.
Will you watch the second season, especially this first episode, considering Antonio Brown is one of the guests?
If I'm flipping the channels and it's on, I may stop on it.
But you aren't going to make it appointment television.
It's not appointment television
for you.
For me, no.
Okay.
Ray?
I think the show's effectiveness will wane pretty quickly because players are really good at getting their message out. Even if I don't think LeBron James is opening their inner souls. I think they're saying what they mean to say, and they know what they mean to say before they go in.
What do you think?
You think the NBA pay attention to this for, like, tampering charges?
I was just going to say, what do you think about Anthony Davis being on the show, considering,
well,
you know,
it's not
the
tampering.
Lakers wanting...
It can't be tampering because it's a player.
LeBron's the GM, right? And Rob Pelinka technically has the title, but...
Well, technically
who's pulling the strings?
Well, okay. Who's pulling the strings in Golden State?
Hmm.
Question.
Damn right it is.
That's pretty good. The episode was filmed during All-Star Weekend in Charlotte, so they just wrapped this one up. I think I might watch it. I didn't catch the first season, really, but, you know, this one looks like a pretty good cast.
Number four.
Of characters. All right, so how do you guys feel about breakdancing? Did you guys get the cardboard box out back in the day, the boom box?
I was awful.
How old do you think I am?
I don't know. You might have a passion for it.
I gave up on it really quick, Gianna, for good reason.
All right. Well, guess what, guys? Breakdancing could actually be in the 2024 Olympics. It was proposed as a new sport to the IOC by host Paris. So surfing, climbing, and skateboarding were also put forward for inclusion at the Paris Games. This is coming from the BBC Sports. If they are approved, they will be added to the 28 sports already included in the Olympic program. So breakdancing, by the way, just so you know, the 2018 Youth Olympic Games in Buenos Aires did include breakdancing. So it's actually a sport that's kind of up and coming and apparently popular enough to make the Youth Olympics. That's why there's a strong consideration to put it in the regular Olympics.
Is it a sport?
I think
it's active.
I'm not saying it's not. It's an activity. It's not a sport.
I think if you can't measure the achievement, like by points or distance or time, it's an activity. Anything that's judged is, in my mind, not a sport.
Couldn't you?
It could be a pastime. It could be an activity.
So figure skating is not a sport to you?
No, because
really,
you can't judge what is or is not perfection or what is better than what. You have to rely on old people in blazers, and that's not, to me, a sport.
But I think a lot of figure skating is, you know, like certain moves you do, you get higher points, you know, triple axel will give you a better score than something else.
Yeah, but somebody has to judge whether those moves are performed to a certain vague standard.
Umpires used to wear blazers.
Well, okay, but they weren't sitting in a special booth behind a table.
That's very true.
So maybe to me, there's a difference. If you need somebody else to tell you what somebody did, I have a problem with that.
I mean, there's sports in the Olympics, though, that are a little bit different anyway.
I don't think breakdancing's
that far-fetched.
I'm not saying that any of it's far-fetched. I mean, the Olympics are trying to remain relevant at a time when cities en masse are refusing to entertain them anymore.
You know, the sport that I get drawn to the Olympics is team handball.
Yeah, that's actually kind of fun to watch.
I got to watch this. This is awesome.
Well, curling.
Yeah, curling. Yeah.
As goofy as that is, you know what your point value is.
There's a scoreboard.
There's a clock, but you can look, oh, that's closer than that because here is a objective measurement.
How do you feel about gymnastics?
Same thing. Gymnastics to me can be a very entertaining thing, and for people who want to define it as a sport, great. I'm not doctrinaire about it, but for me, if somebody else is telling you whether you did well or not, that doesn't work for me.
So you don't think it belongs in the Olympics?
No, I don't care what's in the Olympics, but I'm just saying, you asked me what is my definition of a sport. That's it. Boxing to me is not a sport because of that.
Interesting. Okay.
Because boxing, unless you knock a guy unconscious, somebody is judging whether you won or not.
Is bowling a sport?
Yes, because you can count the pins.
But it's not that physically strenuous.
I didn't say physical strenuousness is a part of it.
As long as you can basically have a score.
As long as there is an objective standard that can be easily understood and not manipulated by judges or politics, to me, that's fine.
The 1972 basketball in the Olympics was manipulated by politics and judges.
But the purpose of this game, I mean, yeah, there are fixed games all the time. Baseball is a sport to me, but the 1919 World Series really wasn't. I mean, but to me, Anybody who likes figure skating and gymnastics, go with God. Enjoy it. I mean, I'm not. I'm fine.
You're not
with
knocking
all
the sport. You just don't think
no,
that it's the same.
I'm just saying that for me, it's the only clear and unambiguous delineation you can make, because any other question along these lines is, well, what do you like more? And that to me is all subjective. And at some point, there has to be an objective standard. And that's the only one I can come up with.
Well, if there are breakdancers out in the audience, get your head spins ready and your windmills, because you potentially could
break down that cardboard.
Yeah, be in the Olympics. Lastly here, because we got to run, it's the top of the hour. Rugby obviously is a nasty sport. So a rugby player was suspended 13 weeks, why you ask, for blowing snot on an opponent. It was hidden by a massive swarm of bodies around the ball when they all kind of went down. Anyway, there was snot all over the opponent's face, and he did apologize, but not to the guy he covered in boogers. Gross. That's disgusting.
It's only 15 yards in the NFL.
Ugh.
Say it with phlegm.
No, he does Giants games.
Okay. I'm going to remind him that you equated him with spewed.
So don't do that, kids. Don't blow snot on your opponents. It's gross.
Hour from now, it'll be Warriors Live as the Warriors are back at it after the All-Star break. Jumping into the Warriors talk. But first, we have to be legal.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.